to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a dual interview with David Lopez, the president and CEO, and Julia Bogoslawski, the chief marketing officer for booming gaming supplier AGS, about the company's recent IPO. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. For several years now, the best-kept secret in gaming suppliers was AGS, formerly American Gaming Systems, about the quality and performance of its products. Well, that time is now over, as a recent IPO for the company has made them the toast of the Strip and of Wall Street. David Lopez, the president and CEO, explains how a disciplined growth strategy built up the company and attracted the attention of investment giant Apollo Global Management, which took them public. Chief Marketing Officer Julia Bogoslawski reveals how the AGS slot product and a relatively recent entrance into the table game market have become the foundation of a company with great products, a talented and deep marketing team, and loyal customers. They sat down with me and editor Frank Legato at the AGS headquarters in Las Vegas in January for the cover story of the March issue of GGB. David Lopez and Julia Bogoslawski, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Congratulations on the IPO. That's exciting. Last week it went public. The stock is going through the roof. Let's hope. and so explain how you got to this point. You know, why you decided to go public to begin with.
Well, so we're sponsored by Apollo. It was a private equity firm. And right now, it's a good market. You know, I think that at some point they have to pick an entry point for liquidity. Although they're really not selling anything right now, we basically issued enough stock to cover our PIK note. So we're taking care of the PIK note. It's a good time in the market, and it's a nice time to sort of establish that liquidity platform.
Okay.
Did you have a vision 4 years ago when you arrived? Did you have a vision of what you needed to accomplish before you were ready to go public?
I mean, I think at some point I was clueless, but no. So we had a vision, like before I was even hired, we discussed sort of like in the interviewing process, if you want to call it the interviewing process, we talked about what AGS needed to become. You know, AGS was primarily a class two distributor. We wanted to become more of a class two and class three diversified global gaming supplier. What would it take to get there? So from our perspective, both Apollo, the sponsor, and myself, we said, hey, we know it's going to take some acquisitions. It's going to take some to do some things organically. But, you know, we had to start with people. And we'd have to start, you know, with really hiring and establishing a great management team to sort of lead us forward. You know?
And what will you be able to achieve now as a public company that was more difficult as a private company?
I mean, I wouldn't say, like, with Apollo as a sponsor, you're not really constrained a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of difficulties. The way that they support and, you know, the way that they sort of financially help us get things accomplished, there's not a whole lot of things from a public perspective that, you know, we'll be able to do that we weren't able to do before. You could argue that, of course, that now that we have a public currency, that there's the ability to do M&A in different ways. But generally speaking, you know, we've been all accomplished everything we wanted to do so far, and it's gone very well in that respect.
And the nice thing, too, is that we were a public filer previously. So that's something that, of course, continues, but we already internally sort of have the discipline for that. But I think that, you know, there's more, probably a little bit more transparency, and there's probably a little bit more attention and scrutiny. So that's one thing that we've prepared sort of our team for culturally is, hey, you know, more people are going to take a look at AGS. But I think we're ready and we're really proud. So we're excited for that.
Does this bring some benefits to your customers and to the players as well, you being a public company?
I'd like to say that it should be transparent to our customers and the players. I mean, obviously, customers, there's a lot of customers that are rooting for us as a public company. Now that there's a stock and they can look at it every day and they can track it every day, I think it's something that they get excited about and they wish all the vendors well, I'm sure. And every public company, you know, that's a vendor, I think it's exciting for them to sort of watch the stocks. So from a customer and a player point of view, our goal is for it to be transparent. We don't want them to feel like any bumps in the road or any changes, really,
okay,
from that perspective.
So you mentioned that all the money you raised through this is going into the PIC note. Are you going to use some of this capital for reinvesting in the capital here in terms of
We're taking out the PIC note. We're mm-hmm. deleveraging.
Right.
That was a big thing, I think, that we've talked about in the past. And, you know, when we were on the road IPOing the company, is that we're really deleveraging the company. I think that will be between 4 and 4.3 times levered when it's all said and done.
And that's pretty much industry standard now, isn't it?
The industry standard's all over the shop.
Yeah,
you know, there's some that are much higher. There's mm-hmm. a couple that are lower, maybe, you know, around fours in one of those comfort zones, if you will, in the industry.
Right, yep. Right. Okay.
But our uses of cash moving forward definitely is still to fund growth opportunities.
Right.
So since we have so much great, white space ahead of us, especially in the Class 3 market, mm-hmm. we want to be able to capitalize on those opportunities, make sure that we can get all those units in the field, and definitely sort of prioritize use of the cash to go to that, and also R&D, as we've talked about in the past. And then we think we could be in a position where we could continue maybe to delever.
Does your perspective as an executive change to a shorter term view at all, because you have to reconcile every quarter now as a public company?
I mean, it better not, right? I mean, from Kimo, our CFO's point of view, nothing really changed either. He's already been doing all the quarterly reporting, mm-hmm. the Qs and Ks, mm-hmm. as if we're sort of a public company. That's sort of at the request of Nevada Gaming.
Sure.
And obviously we did that. So the way we behave, the way we run the company, the way we plan for the future, the way we treat every quarter, isn't really going to change at all. It's not like we're going to sprint to every quarter. We'll probably settle on annual guidance
mm-hmm.
Because I think that we know what we're going to do over the course of a year. And quarter to quarter, things may change. There's seasonality. Whether one deal or two deals or three deals fall into one quarter or the other is really irrelevant. You know, on an annual basis, we're going to guide. So, we don't want to change the way we behave transitioning from public to private.
Mm-hmm. No, and a lot of the investors, too, that we visited on the road and that we will target and continue to target will be sort of long-only institutions. That's always our sort of focus or priority.
Mm-hmm.
We want investors who are, committed to the story for the long term, who believe in the team, believe in the fundamentals, and who are looking out, 2 years, 3 years, aren't looking for, like, quarterly movement. So when we think of investor targeting, we try to, control that best we can.
Sure, right. So what level of ownership does Apollo still have at this point?
So, after the IPO, they own about 69% still.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that in stock?
As a percentage of the company, their equity in the company is still 69%.
Okay. Yep. So they're still more than invested
here
in the company.
They've got a couple. Right. They'll have two or three board seats.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be around for quite some time. They've been great partners.
Mm-hmm.
David Sandberg's been a great boss.
Right.
He supports everything that we've wanted to do with the company. I think that we understand our long-term and short-term strategies, and Apollo's been very supportive.
Let's talk about the team you built here. I mean, that's what has really impressed me, from the day one when you had Majdunski was in here, right? And he started building the team. Then you came along and you built it even with some more impressive people. You've got Andrew Burke, you've got John Hamburger, you've got Julia, you've got a really powerful team here that is well respected across the industry. And then you've put a corporate culture on top of that I think is pretty unique in the industry. What was your thought when you put all that together?
I mean, when we look at this thing and we thought about it from the very start, and we began to sort of say, hey, this is how we're going to build the company. This is how we're going to build the product lines. From the previous regime, we kept some folks on board, and every person we hired, Sigmund Lee was part of an acquisition. Matt Reback came on board from another vendor.
Yeah.
He also had operational experience. Julia, obviously from the vendor side, as well as John. So when we looked at this, it wasn't just about having great players, but you talked about the culture, and each person had to fill a role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Patriots fan. I don't really care for Bill Belichick.
Right.
But we need people that understand what their job is,
right.
And then we need them to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the Patriot slogan, right? And for everyone to sort of stay in their lane, we'll do anything it takes to win.
Right.
But in this room that we sit in right here, in the boardroom, right. Or the Death Star, as we call it, this is where everything is discussed.
Right.
This is where all disagreements are handled. And when we're done in here, it's done.
Right.
And it wasn't just about hiring all-stars.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's plenty of teams in baseball and football that do that and they fail.
Sure.
And I think our goal was to hire all-stars that understood the culture, that could adapt to the culture in a very unique environment where people speak very openly in front of one another,
mm-hmm.
but there's no hard feelings.
Right.
Because we're not going to win being political. We're going to win being, you know, a team of 550 employees, as I like to say, and I'll steal this from the late Tim Parrott, pulling oars all in the same direction.
Right, right. And one of the things I think that has been so good about the company so far, and hopefully will continue during your public phase here, is that you're able to turn the ship pretty quickly. You know, you don't have to wait for 10 miles down the ocean there where it's finally going to start turning. You can turn it when you see an opportunity. Will that continue, do you think?
Yeah, it's not going to change. That's part of our culture. That's actually
right.
Part of our culture. It's also part of the Apollo right. culture is that, you know, there is no tomorrow,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why not today?
Right.
You know, I think it's something that as when we're running these businesses, you know, we were on the road for 2 weeks. We IPO'd on Friday.
Right.
You know, we priced Thursday night. We IPO'd on Friday. And we continue to get asked the question, like, hey, how soon do you think you're going to reprice your debt? And my answer was, Kimo and I will take the weekend off.
Right. Yeah, right.
Because it's starting this week.
Yeah, sure.
There's no need to wait. And so that's the kind of culture we are. We've had executives that, you know, join the company and they say, hey, we'll talk about a problem, we'll talk through a solution, and then they'll say, well, what do we need to sort of get this done and move it forward? And I said, well, we just did it.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're surprised to
sure,
see how
right.
quick and nimble we can be. We don't have to send it up to Galactic headquarters mm-hmm. or something
sure.
for an approval. We're the approval right,
right.
here sitting
okay.
you know, around
great.
The table.
The pace is great. I mean, I think David, again, you know, has created a culture where, as he talks about, we get it out there on the table and we move quickly on decisions. And it's even part of our mission statement, which
mm-hmm.
is the bigger that we get, the smaller we need to act.
Right.
So that's something that all employees know. Like, we still have to, you know, never lose sight of those things that we do today that got us to the position
right.
where we are, where we're able
yeah.
to grow and grow quickly.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the product. Frank, you're the product expert, so you take that
on. Yeah, let's drill down and get a little bit up on the short-term, long-term goals of each division. On the slot side, you've been loading up on content for both the Orion and Icon cabinets. New high denomination game using the Big Red platform. What are the development priorities for the slot division this year? New game styles? Are we going to see more new progressives? Are we going to see more cabinets?
So in the slot segment, we'll release an Orion Slant
mm-hmm.
in Q2 of this year, in Q2 of 2018. So that's right around the corner. Clearly, you know, we're developing content for that. We have some progressive content for that. I don't think that you'll see us veer stylistically from what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at our games, we're developing games for gamblers. I think our first interview that we had, way before Cadillac Jack was acquired, way before Sigmund Lee was a twinkle in our eye, right, was that we were developing games for gamblers. That would be our charge. And we would attack that segment, and I think we've done just that. We'll continue to do that. We've got now another cabinet coming out, so we'll do it on that cabinet. Nothing too dramatic. They'll have new style progressives, different types of link progressives, but those are just the little details, right? I mean,
sure.
In the end, we'll be attacking that medium to high volatility style game and that type of player.
Okay, and Class 2, Rocket Gaming Systems certainly, you know, added your footprint out there. How has that helped the company, and what further expansions do you foresee in the Class 2 area?
So I think that puts us over 23,000 units on recurring revenue, so 23,500-ish, not including anything that's happened since that acquisition, but we'll be announcing our quarter soon. So You know, we like the opportunity to take that footprint, tack it on to what we have, manage it, optimize it, make the most of it. But clearly, recurring revenue is our focus. Mm-hmm. Yes, we sell games, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, that's part of our growth. But 83% of our revenue comes from recurring sources. As we expand internationally, that could grow. Mm-hmm. You know, so our focus is continue to grow that base. It gives us great stability. It allows for us as a management team and for our sponsors to plan accordingly for the future and look out 2 to 3 years and have a lot of confidence in what we're doing. So really that's part of the strategy there is just to increase that recurring revenue base.
And we think that with some of the Class 2 base, you know, you talk about growth in that segment, we think that there's opportunity to still kind of grow modestly, grow the footprint modestly, but even more important, we believe that there's great opportunity to optimize some of the existing base. So David talked about doing that with some of the Rocket units, but also that very big base of 23,000 plus machines. We've targeted about 4,700 that we believe are great candidates to upgrade mm-hmm. with some of this nice high-performing content and be able to get a nice RPD lift. So we have a whole team of analysts that work on that and look all the time at what makes sense, you know, in different properties. What are some of these units that are really ripe to upgrade with new content? So that's a way that we think we can grow the recurring revenue dollars mm-hmm. Moving forward.
And how much of Class 3 is recurring revenue now?
Class 3 is probably 20 to 30%.
So I can tell you that on a go-forward basis and on sort of a consistent basis, about 30% of all the units that are installed in Class 3 are recurring, give or take, mm-hmm. right?
That Colossal Diamond?
That'll move around a little bit. Well, 99.9% of Colossal Diamonds is recurring. So if that's in Class 3, those are just about all recurring. But from a just overall Class 3, 30% or so is recurring revenue. About 70% of units that are shipped out end up being purchased.
And doesn't that, knowing that revenue is there, give you the flexibility to be a little bit more risky in other areas and maybe try new things?
I mean, you know, like I think that risky is probably a big word. But no, it's not a bad word. It's probably even the appropriate word. But it allows us to take some chances that maybe you wouldn't take if 93 or 95% of your revenue came from sales instead mm-hmm. of recurring sources. It gives you the ability to plan, look forward, understand what your needs are from a capital point of view. And so it does allow us in our M&A, space, we've done over 20 acquisitions since Apollo has acquired the company, since they made their investment. Will we continue to look at acquisitions? We'll have the same discipline there. Clearly we've raised the bar. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be as risky as we once were. That said, we're still out there. We're always looking at, M&A.
And it never ceases to impress me that you built this table games division. From scratch, is the build-up complete, and where does that division go next?
I mean, I don't think anything's complete. I think that, you know, we'll continue to do what we're doing, continue to expand the division. Are we comfortable with the portfolio? When I sat sort of on the perch at G2E near our little coffee bar and looked over into the table game section of our booth, this last year, 2017 at G2E, I was able to sit there and say, this has come together beautifully. We have an absolutely phenomenal product portfolio. I think that any customer that came in to see us was impressed with the diversity of the portfolio. Going forward, we probably will continue to take a look at expanding that portfolio. But that said, we've been able to do it because we hired the right people. We got John in here. He has experience. He understands, you know, the pieces and parts and how to put together a portfolio like that. So nothing's done either on the slot side or on the table side or on the interactive side. We'll always be active trying to improve those divisions.
What have been your biggest successes at tables? Has it been side bets, proprietary games?
It's been a combination of a few different things. What's nice is if you look at the segment as a whole, we're very diversified, not just in the different segments we offer mm-hmm. In the table space, but then in the content in each of those segments. So that's premium games, side bets, table signage, progressive technology, and table equipment. Mm-hmm. So I'd say some highlights that stand out is our Buster Blackjack side bet.
Sure.
I know you guys have covered that past. That's just a great testament to what we can do when we make an acquisition of a game that maybe has limited installs, mm-hmm. but then under our sort of umbrella of sales channels and licenses, mm-hmm. we're able to then quadruple the install. In the case of Buster Blackjack, we're very excited about our recent acquisition of the InBet assets. Mm-hmm. So those present some very exciting, side bets moving forward. And then Bonus Spin has been great. We're excited with that rollout. It's in properties, Caesars, Las Vegas Sands, MGM, and I think Foxwoods and Mohegan's here shortly. So that's been a tremendous product. As well as, the potential, launch of the Shuffler.
Sure.
That will be this year.
Right.
So very excited about that based on operator feedback.
What was your strategy going in against a well-entrenched competition on the table game side?
The 800-pound gorilla.
Right. We worked for the 800-pound gorilla.
Right.
Each and every one of us sort of have worked for the 800-pound gorilla. I was there for 14 and a half years. I understand, the ins and outs of the business. John Hamburger was there for a number of years. He ran the table game division. I think that it's a space where customers are interested in other options, but I also think that it's a space that we understand well enough that we just know how to compete, and there's no need to be afraid of the 800-pound gorilla. There was once a time, in the slot division where we all asked the same question, mm-hmm. because somebody had 75 to 80% ship share.
Mm-hmm.
And things have changed quite dramatically there, and there's no reason that the same thing can't happen in the table game space.
Speaking of entrenched competition, the interactive side certainly, as well has the same companies that are entrenched in there. What's your strategy to compete there on the interactive side?
So very competitive business, as you said. There's a lot of people in the space, both in our brick-and-mortar supply space and outside of brick-and-mortar. Mm-hmm. So we've been primarily a B2C supplier of social gaming. Mm-hmm. We now provide a white label B2B product. In 2017, in the second half, we won about 6 deals. Just early on here in just January of 2018, we've already won 2 more deals just in the first month. Each one of those deals exceeds the combined total of all the deals we did in 2017. So we're starting to scale up a little bit. We started small. We didn't want to jump out there too fast. So we started with smaller customers, and now we're stepping up to larger customers and still winning deals. So that's
and you're getting a reputation as a quality provider as well.
Yeah, we have the B2C app is quality. The B2B app right now is going great for our customers. They like the tools that we can provide them with. They like their ability to sort of operate those games. So we're confident in that space, and we're confident to be able to compete in that space.
Do you anticipate that platform being like tomorrow's real money online gaming platform?
Spreads? It's a good question. Ultimately, when you think about that platform, it would require some changes. So it'll either be a variation of that platform if we were to do RMG, or it would be a completely separate platform. Not there yet. Not something we're doing at this time. We look at it pretty consistently. We analyze that and look at that because it's a big part of the industry. But that's more of a wait and see thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, and this other question: do you plan to branch into other areas, skill games, systems, branded games?
So we're already doing skill games on the table games. We think that you didn't use the M word. You didn't say millennials.
No.
So I'll say it. But,
we try to avoid that.
This next generation, and a lot of people are focused on skill games because of the next generation, because this millennial generation that spends a lot of time in the nightclub, they spend a lot of time in experiential stuff. But at the end of the day, just like Gen X, we started at the table games.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll migrate to those table games and already starting to migrate. They weren't going to buy houses either, but they're now buying houses. Remember, millennials
will not
buy a home. Of course they're going to buy a home. They're buying houses, and guess what? They're going to play table games. Table games are social. You can sit down, you can have your drinks, you can hang out, talk to your friends, you can even goof around on your phone a little bit. You can't do too crazy with that. But at the end of the day, that's a social sort of skilled game that we believe millennials will play. So we're already in that space right now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about branded games? Recurring revenue being an important...
Not yet. Right now, we're having a lot of success with our premium products without having licenses. They're expensive. They slow down the development process. We do believe they can actually frustrate development teams. So if we were to get into that, we'd be very thoughtful and deliberate mm-hmm. and mindful of what that would mean to our company. Right now, we're 2% market share out there, right? Mm-hmm. We're ship sharing between 5 and 8%, you know, ship share on a quarterly basis if you look at the Eilers report, right? So we believe there's a lot of meat on the bone for us to get out there and sort of steal share. And we don't need to get into that license game just yet. Will there be a day? There could be a day, but it's not something that we're looking at right now.
How about you mentioned the international market expansion out there. You have a timetable for that? And what areas of the world are you thinking about at this
point? So we're already in Mexico. Right. And although I don't really look at Mexico as like really big international, and I don't look at Canada as big international, I sort of look at those as almost domestic.
Sure.
I feel like that's our friends to the south and our friends to the north.
Right.
And, you know, so we'll call that North America. But we are expanding into Canada. We think there's a huge opportunity in Canada for us. Our early returns on installs that our games are performing very well. We've hired a salesperson for Canada. Mexico's been growing year over year now 2 years in a row. That's after multiple years of contraction under previous ownership. So right now we've been growing that. And then from there, we're actually right here in Q1 is our first installations in the Philippines into a Latin bingo market. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that and that opportunity. And, of course, we're prepared for Brazil should the law pass. There's a vote February 21st of this year. Mm-hmm. So it's coming up here soon.
Right.
There's another vote coming up. I can't handicap that vote.
Sure.
But we do think that that the country has sort of a desire for the tax dollars. We know that there's a bill that'll be in front of the lawmakers, and we know that those votes are coming. So we're confident that something will break there.
And the great news with going into the Philippines, too, is this will help us grow a recurring revenue base.
Right.
Because that market is a recurring revenue market. Same with Brazil. So when you asked about how do you grow that footprint going international, we're very selective with the markets we go into, and those two markets make great sense for us to grow that base.
Okay. And then you mentioned the M&A activity that you've had from the start. There's been some bigger consolidation in the supplier side. Are you paying attention to that? And you know, could you possibly see maybe a merger with some of the larger companies down the road?
So obviously, there's been quite a bit over the past, I guess, 4 years or 5 years. Consolidation has been a theme, right? And most recently, Novomatic and Ainsworth do their thing. You know, certainly consolidation is, we consolidated.
Sure,
you know,
of course, right.
We acquired Cadillac Jack. Mm-hmm. So that was really the merger of two like-sized companies, actually.
Right.
We doubled everything, employees, revenue, EBITDA, you know, our install base somewhere in the range of a double. So we've done a little bit of that already. We certainly wouldn't shy away from it. You know, we're not out there actively seeking, you know, to be acquired or merged with anybody, but I'm sure there's opportunities going forward. We look at our M&A opportunities and we try to find things that are really going to enhance AGS instead of necessarily doing something transformative, but we certainly don't rule anything like that out.
Okay. We don't need it to grow.
Sure,
everything that David's talked about, a lot of times a company, you know, will look at something, hey, we need new growth lever, but AGS isn't in that position.
Yeah, we're often asked the question, do we budget or forecast M&A? And we don't do that.
Right.
Every bit of growth that we budget and forecast is relatively organic, if you will. It's organic growth going forward. So we do not budget and forecast our M&A.
Great.
Well, I had a question planned on how you what do you attribute to being named one of the best and brightest companies to work for, which you were recently voted. But I believe you answered that at the beginning of the interview.
Yeah, I think maybe Julie would be best to answer that one. Anyways, I don't really know always how to answer that one.
David, David will often joke, he joked, you know, with investors on the road about what his, you know, job really is. And he says, hey, look, I'm sort of really the guy in charge of human resources. And it drives our VP of HR crazy at times, but it's so true. David is so focused on his people. I think you guys have got a good sense for that when you come to Game On. Everyone really enjoys working with one another. And this is a culture where people are very empowered, able to speak their minds without repercussion. And there's this tone of playfulness with all of it. So no matter how busy we are and how fast we're moving, we can't forget to have fun. That all comes from David. You know, people meet him. They say how accessible he is. And he's kind of a no BS guy. And investors certainly felt the same thing. So everything kind of stems from the top, and it's trickled down in the organization. And so we're very proud of that designation, especially given our size. So we go, will AGS won this, you know, best and brightest on a national level. And it has to do, again, with the culture that we put in place here and our commitment to the community. That's also a big part of it, too. But a big part of that award is the things we do in our local communities at some of our different locations. So very recently we adopted a local school here, Griffith Elementary, and we've been really committed all throughout the year to doing a number of different hands-on events with our employees and also financially sponsoring the school.
Great. And you mentioned Game On. That's a Pechanga this year?
Yes.
Are you keeping it the same general size? Are you keeping that same
size? Ask the boss here.
Yeah, we're keeping it about the same size. So I think every year we plan to just grow it a smidge based on demand. We get more demand every single year. But we love that size because it allows everybody to sort of feel like, hey, over the course of 3 days, you can meet everybody and it still feels intimate. So it'll be similar in size, but we're very excited to bring it to the West Coast. After 2 years East Coast, we said it's time to bring it West. And Pechanga, the great news with that location is, you know, a great display of our product, but great customers. And it will be sort of timed well with their expansion. So our customers will get to see, you know, all the efforts they've made in expanding. And it's really beautiful. We did a hard hat tour and we're just blown away.
Okay. You mentioned Tim Parrott, which, you know, great guy, you know, really inspirational. And you know, going back through that previous company, you worked with a lot of really unique people there. What did you learn while you were with that company that you brought here? Good and bad.
No, it's a great question. And, you take a guy that, you know, grew up in Troy, New York, didn't get very good grades in high school. He went to UNLV. And barely eked out at 2.89 or something like that. I wasn't a very good student. And you ask yourself, how the heck did I get anything accomplished in life? And I think the answer is, you know, Joe Lotti, Mark Yosloff, Tim Parrott, David Samber, folks like that. And if you're willing to listen and you're willing to learn, each and every one of those guys brought something to the table. Clearly, Mark Yosloff had the most years with me. And I think that there was a lot that he shared with me. Joe Lotti in my early years really taught me a lot about, ironically, being CEO, but I was just an analyst at the time. And then Tim Parrott was a huge influence. And I think we carry a torch of culture, and I'm going to try not to get emotional here, but we carry a torch of culture and community service that Tim instilled in us, along with customer service. That is here in AGS today, a bit because of Tim Parrott.
Right.
And then, of course, David Samber. I mean, I think he's one of the smartest guys I've ever worked for and has been tremendous and sort of, you know, tutoring me along the way as well.
Sure, great.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Sometimes better be lucky than good.
Absolutely. To have those kind of people, you know, showing you the way, I think really makes a difference for sure.
Not very good, but I'm hella lucky.
Right. All right, just one more question. What are your biggest short-term and long-term priorities as you go forward here now?
So short-term is always tough for me. I don't try to think about the short-term, and that is why we have an awesome team, right?
Sure, right.
Because the quarter is being focused on by Andrew Berg, by, you know, John Hemberger, and, you know, Drew Pollock and the whole team across the board. Matt Reback focused on the quarter. Robert Perry focused on the quarter. So I try to stay out of their quarterly business. Of course, we talk about the quarter.
Sure.
Of course, I know what's going on with the quarter on a month-to-month basis. And I do ask my questions. I'm sure the guys will tell you that they're getting their texts, right? But that said, long term, I think it's more about the health and the growth of the company. So we talk about this quite often. We're going to grow, but we have to grow in a responsible and healthy manner. We don't want to get out over our skis. We don't want to go out and do M&A that has really no business being in AGS. We want to be mindful with our M&A. So as we grow the company, I think the key is, you know, maintain our culture, really stay true to ourselves, right? And grow responsibly. Make sure that we're growing responsibly so we're not just, you know, some short-term, you know, story in gaming.
Right. Great. Yeah. Well, great. That was a great interview. I really enjoyed talking to you. And, again, congratulations on what you're doing here with the IPO. I think the future certainly is bright for AGS. And we'll stay in touch and try to continue to tell a story.
You guys make it fun. We're glad you
came. Yes.
Thank you. We're coming to your town. We're an American band. Come on, see us in play.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. To learn more about the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com, or for a weekly update, visit GGBNews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, or on LinkedIn and Facebook at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. We're coming to